Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can't say it's an everyday sight to see a group of field tractors surrounding Northumberland Hills Hospital, along with a long line of pickup trucks following close behind. But that was the scene recently during a tractor parade organized by the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture to thank the frontline staff at the hospital. It is a rare sight to see farmers being so public. Usually, they toil away quietly, making sure we all have food in front of us. And while you may see the odd billboard reminding you that farmers feed cities, these are not the type of people who take a bow. Like all of us, their world is also turned upside down. Today, you're going to hear a bit of a different story from Consider This. Rather than the usual Q&A format normally heard on this show, the interviews were turned into a documentary. Since there are so many different types of farms and farmers, it made sense to talk to a large group rather than one or two normally featured on the show. Five members of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture gave time to be interviewed for this story. I hope you enjoy it. Grocery shopping is becoming the main activity for so many of us during the pandemic. It can be a bit unnerving. We're not used to shelves being empty or produce aisles being full one week but not the next. Then there's the logistics of shopping, standing in line, physical distancing, sanitizing, and other precautions. If nothing else, it dramatically increases our understanding and appreciation of where our food comes from. Very soon, farmers will be putting crops into the ground that will take months to grow. These seeds will be the foundation of the food we will eat come this fall and next winter. We also depend on the livestock producers for beef, pork, lamb, chicken, and all the processed foods that come from those farms. Farmers work on a very tight and precise schedule. There is a window when crops must go into the ground to maximize the growing season and not get hit with frost. Then there are the livestock farmers. There is a continuous cycle of giving birth to new animals, raising them to a precise size, and then getting them to market. Any delays, and the cycle is broken. The animals become too large, less desirable by processors, and prices fall. Then there are the dairy farmers who work on a quota system. They produce exact amounts of milk needed to supply Canadians. But when you start shutting down restaurants and people stop buying coffee on the go, the markets dry up quickly, leaving some farmers to dump milk because they cannot sell it. Add to this a possible labor shortage and the closure of multiple major processing plants in Ontario and Quebec. Suddenly, there are some real concerns for all of us about whether or not the food we want will be there the next time we are in the store. Today, you will hear from several local farmers. They are members of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture, and they took time out of their hectic schedules to talk about the situation as it is unfolding here in the county. This is their story as it is unfolding right now. Within the next 3 weeks, farmers in Northumberland County will plant 280,000 acres of crops. Normally, it is complicated enough. The right weather, temperature of the ground, rain, and other factors are all in the hands of Mother Nature. But with the precautionary measures of the pandemic, it is even more complicated. Mark DeYoung, a local farmer, explains one of the current challenges.
We're going to hopefully start next week planting. Our fertilizer suppliers are dealing with this COVID-19 as well with their staff. We're concerned that they're spending a lot of time on protocols to keep their staff safe, which is great, but it's also going to slow down the delivery of our products of fertilizer as we need it to plant our crops. We are being told that, that as of last week, they were still spending 4 hours a day on protocols, and we also know that they, as the spring ramps up, they hire new staff constantly to reduce the amount of hours that the regular staff is doing to do the delivery. So there's always this training that's going to be happening, and we're concerned that the supply is going to be delayed.
But while it may be worrisome, farmers remain pretty positive that the crops will get into the ground. Ben Corelli, who runs a family grain operation, says people should not worry.
But most of us are very optimistic, I think. The rest of the guys here will agree with me. They're all going to put crops in. They're probably not going to change their planting intentions too dramatically because it's a long time till harvest and things can change. And we're all, being a farmer, we're all optimists, and we expect the markets to come bouncing back and demand to be there. We all have to eat.
For livestock operations like beef, pork, chicken, it is another ball of wax. Like crop planting, Mother Nature's in charge. These operations are organized in a very sophisticated way to ensure a consistent supply of steaks, chop, and all kinds of processed foods are available. These operations are in continuous cycle going from birth or farrowing, as it is called, to market. The De Jong family operates a hog and turkey farm as well as cash crops. He tells us just how tight things are to meet consumer demands.
We expect that there's going to be food in and on the shelves at all times, that we can pick and choose whenever we want. So for that to happen, we as farmers are every week breeding livestock, pigs especially. We're breeding them every week, and they are pregnant for about 4.5 months, and then they we call it farrowing, which is birthing, and then it takes another 5 to 6 months for them to go to market size. So when there's a disruption at the processing end, we cannot shut the tap off at the other end because it's already predetermined 5 to 6 months in advance to keep that supply flowing at a steady pace through the system.
Right now, it is the processing plants where the most significant problems exist. Several plants across Canada were shut down because of cases of employees coming down with COVID-19. Operations have also changed to meet public health demands of physical distancing. Two hog plants in Quebec, one in southwestern Ontario, and a beef processor in Alberta were impacted. Sid Atkinson is the president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture. He is a beef and dairy farmer. This is his perspective on the processor's closing.
We really haven't noticed a major downturn in our cull cows, but I do know my friends in the feedlot business, they're having trouble getting their stock, their animals to market. And the other part is they just keep on growing and then they get discounted for their animals being too big. It's a real problem. Beef guys are wanting to have some kind of a program that will help keep those animals on feed longer and perhaps give them a ration that they don't grow as fast on, try and wait this thing out. But it is a problem, and the beef guys, there is some hurt going on.
Mark De Jong talks about what it means for hog farmers.
So with the processing plants being closed, and from the last time we had talked, they were closed. Now they're reopened to a 30% capacity with still a large backlog of hogs. I'm going to talk mostly about hogs, is the hogs of, that are backed up in the food chain or on farms is about 35,000 over the province, and that needed to go to Quebec for the processing or to be processed. They are, because of the COVID-19, the staff were reduced and it was all shut down. And now it's slowly coming back with more restrictions. As of today, we have heard that the CFIA, which is the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the federal government is spending another $20 million to hire, train, and equip additional staff to limit the disruptions, which is good news. But we still have to work our way through this backlog of livestock that need to go to processing.
All this is tightly tied to consumer demand. We all want to have our bacon with breakfast or our chicken strips for dinner. It is even more pronounced because many of us are eating at home. And while local restaurants try to provide meals delivered or takeout, there is a drastic drop in some sectors of the agri-food industry. Nobody thinks that when people stop getting coffee from Tim Hortons, it hits the milk producers hard. Suddenly, we are reading screaming headlines about milk being dumped. Dairy farmer Sid Atkinson assures us that's not happening locally.
Yeah, we've had to dump a bit of milk, but instead of matching the demand to the supply, we match the supply to the demand. So we've had to do a small quota cut. Kind of all the farmers are taking a bit of a cut in the amount that they can produce or produce right to their quota. But so far, so good. We haven't had to dump any milk in this part of the country or probably of the province anyways.
For fruit and vegetable farmers, it's another story entirely. Those farmers depend on a large contingent of migrant workers from the Caribbean, Mexico, and Central America to run their labor-intensive operations. Paul Burnham, who runs a well-known local market, along with a fruit and vegetable operation, explains the concerns he and others are facing going into their season.
This labor shortage for the fruit vegetable industry, if we hadn't got that through, like when that announcement came out that no people from other countries can come to Canada, that basically grounded the fruit and vegetable industry in Ontario and perhaps all of Canada, because BC gets a lot of workers in, Quebec gets a lot of workers in. So the government, thank goodness, opened that up. And so I would call that reaction a very good reaction. They realize we need food, and without these workers, there very well could have been a food shortage in this country, and we would be relying on food from who knows where. It's very important, and that was a good response by the government for that. And there are some wage subsidies available. If the workers, we have to pay the workers when they get here, even though when they're in the quarantine for 2 weeks, we still have to pay them for 30 hours. And the government has come up with $1,500 per worker payable to the employers, so that they're basically covering the quarantine wages for that worker. So it's good for those guys because they need the money to send home. And it's good for us because we need the guys, and having to pay them that 2 weeks of labor would have been pretty extraordinary for us to do.
Ben Corelli.
My neighbors are in the apple business. They got four employees. They're hoping to get, they have allocation for another six this summer. I understand they need 26 for harvest, and they're quite concerned they won't get them. They're having to segregate them or change the bunkhouse design such that they all have separate rooms. And as Paul said, they won't be going to the bank. They won't be going shopping. And arrangements are being made for the grocery store for food to be delivered.
Provincial and federal governments are working to mitigate some aspects of this. Funding is being provided to help defray costs. Millions are being spent. It is helping, say local farmers. But is it enough? And there may be more that is needed to address the problems farmers face. Mark DeYoung.
I think that they could step up to the plate a lot more through the programs we do have, with the AgriStability moving that to an 85% threshold. To lose 15% is a lot easier to swallow than to lose 30%. And if the federal government would step to the plate for the risk management program and put some more funding into that, it would give us a lot larger sense of security in what we're doing. We're taking all this risk to get this product to market so our society can eat, and that we also are a major exporter in Canada, that we are generating a lot of revenue for the federal government. And we're not seeing a whole lot of support there.
As consumers, we have a big impact. Sid Atkinson says we should be more careful as we shop.
I believe people are starting to check labels. Where did that food come from? And if it says produced in Canada, grown in Canada, whatever in Canada, they'll have a better feeling about buying that and giving it to their families.
Mark DeYoung says we have to do our part.
When consumers are faced with these types of scenarios where, you know, I've been to the stores here in Coburg, I can see that, you know, there's certain shelves that are actually empty. And when I think about why those shelves are empty, is because the food was being imported from somewhere else. Because the processing, it wasn't that we don't grow some of this food. It's being because of the fact that we're shipping it across the border, packaging it, and shipping it back. You know, if we would just buy product that says made, packaged here in Ontario or here in Canada, we would then attract more of our entrepreneurs to process and package here in Canada and Ontario.
Coming out of these trials and tribulations, farmers are hopeful there will be a renewed appreciation for what they do. This was most recently exemplified for Sid Atkinson.
There was one family that was standing alongside the road, and I'm not sure, there was a child there, maybe 6-7 years old. I didn't notice the child so much as I noticed a sign that he or she was carrying, which said, thank you, farmer. And that really touched a lot of us. There is a new sense here that with empty grocery shelves, people are starting to realize that we don't just take our food for granted now. That food has to come from somewhere. And I don't think people really ever thought about that before. Where does our food come from? And it's a renewed sense of responsibility to us as farmers to be open and transparent about how that food is produced. And as a dairy farmer, people need to feel good that, yes, the dairy farmers are taking good care of their livestock and they're putting out a quality product. And I'm sure it's the same with hogs and grains, you name it. Even Paul with his apples. People want to know that those apples are grown responsibly.
Local farmers want us to be assured our food supply exists, and they are working harder than ever to make sure we don't go hungry. Never before has it been so important to make conscious, deliberate purchases. When we buy ground beef, we should check the sticker to make sure it is Canadian. If we don't see it, ask. Local butchers, roadside operations like Burnham's and others, are more than happy to work with us to get local food into our homes. We can also let governments know how important it is to have processing operations in Canada, that we ship far too much of our food across borders to be processed, then shipped back to us to buy. We need to demand more processors in Canada. Ideally, as farmers have pointed out for many years, we take them for granted. Maybe that will change starting now. It is the respect they deserve. I want to thank all my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County, so please tune in. We are so busy self-isolating, it's important to remember the world has not stopped entirely. If you know of a good story or have an idea for a story, please let me know. You can email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com and include as much details as possible, especially contact information. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you can also email me at this same address. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news and information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.